Okay, nothing heard. Real quick, KC2ZXL on EchoLink. Are you still with us? W2TTT. Alrighty, nothing heard there. Alrighty, so, good evening everyone. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is run every Thursday at 9 p.m. on the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club 2-meter repeater in Alpine, New Jersey on 146.955. The repeater uses a tone of 141.3, well, sometimes called 4A, but it's 141.3 hertz is the tone, and it uses a minus 600 split. We hope you'll join us for the net tonight. You do not need to be a member of Bergen Amateur Radio Association, otherwise known as BARA. You just need to have an amateur radio license that lets you transmit 2-meter bands in the United States of America. You can come in via EchoLink by looking I forgot the call sign. Isn't that amazing? Jimmy's, I'll think of the call sign in a minute anyway. I feel embarrassed here. But anyway, I'll think of the call sign in a second. But in any case, we do take check-ins, but the net is a little different than most when you check in. We want your involvement even if you don't think you have anything to contribute, because we need to know who our audience is and who's got, you know, a perspective on things. And so without signing in, we won't know that perspective being available. And we might need to call on you. I realize that may be embarrassing, but it's never embarrassing. You have nothing to worry about. So we hope you'll participate. In any case, the way we check into the net is we use our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. So let's start with the alpha calls. Any station whose call sign begins with the letter A, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name. Indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Okie dokie, how about the whiskey stations?
W2JEK, and probably have a comment about the e-testing, over.
Two stations. I got Don with a comment ultimately about VE testing. That's great. Thank you, Don. And who is the other station?
W2EWL. Ken, no questions, no comments.
Evening, Ken. Very good. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
W1AU. Bill, none of the above.
Good evening, Bill. Very good. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Okie dokie. Any other whiskeys? Wow, full house of whiskeys here tonight. Well, it's nice to hear Don, Ken, Bill, and Charlie. That's awesome. That is very, very nice. Alrighty. Such a smart group, too. Alrighty, any Novembers? Let's go to the November station next. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name. Indicate whether you have a question, comment, both or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. It's probably too early for Noel. Alrighty, how about the Kilo 2s?
Kilo 2 Alpha, Mike India, K2AMI. Tony, and just some comments about the up-and-coming events of the weekend.
Yes, of which there are numerous things. Good thing, Tony. Very good. Any other stations with Kilo 2 calls? All right, other Kilos.
Then Romeo Golf with a question.
Okay. Very good. Very good. That's Rick, right?
That's correct. It's KTQ. Then Romeo Golf, and here is Rick.
good, Rick. Okay, very fine. Any other kilos?
KO2OK. Bennett, no questions right now.
Hey, Bennett, good evening to you. Any other kilos?
KC2ZMA, Barco. The Fox Hunt question.
Okay, I'll defer that Fox Hunt question until after Tony's announcements, if you don't mind. Any other kilos? Alrighty, let's see. We've done alphas, we've done kilos, we've done novembers. Let's try November again. Any novembers? This okay. Well, with that in mind, let's try. I want to throw a question out there as a starting point. The starting point question is something that Jim Joyce sent me, and I think a few other people, that really got my head scratching, or me scratching my head. Took two fat candles, you know, one's maybe about 2-3 inches in diameter, and stuck a nail about halfway into each one, tied took a magnet and just rubbed it on each nail for a couple seconds each, tied an LED across the two nails, and then lit the candles. When both candles were lit, magic of magics, the LED lit up. I was wondering if anyone could explain the physics of that, because I'll be darned if I get it. It's something very simple and very logical, and I just am just dense. I was wondering if someone could explain that effect.
Battery-powered candle.
W1AU.
W1AU, that was cute, Bennett. Go ahead, Bill.
Should rephrase the question. It's not specifically physics, but it is chemistry.
Okay, what's the chemistry?
It's called an oxidation-reduction reaction, and what happens is you free electrons in the process. It is simple for a chemist, and since Jim is closer to chemistry than I am, he'd be the one that would come up with something like this.
Okay, but let's review here. Both candles are burning, so I'm having trouble. How does the potential difference evolve out of that?
Depends if it's an AC candle or a DC candle.
Okay. No, I'm sorry, I'm asking. So, you're getting free electrons, and it's lighting up. So, I mean, I was fascinated with the LED lighting. I was also fascinated that there was enough to run a 3-volt electric motor, which is kind of neat.
That would surprise me. That's not just voltage, that's current.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm trying to say. There's more to this than I understand. And, I mean, if I lit one candle, I could understand a potential difference. I mean, I get what you're saying, but you're now saying, even though we light both, there's a potential difference. You need a potential difference for current to flow. Current flows, the LED lights up. And, oh, by the way, there's enough to crank even a small motor. So I'll tell you what I'll do to make everybody's life more interesting. Anybody who emails me, I will forward the video of this. This is rather interesting and clever and somewhat provocative, but I mean, your explanation has some resonance with me, Bill, but I'm still having trouble sorting out some of the specifics. How would you measure it? How would you tune it, if you will, for maximum performance? You know, a stronger magnetic field. What are we doing here? What is really going on?
Maybe I'm dense, but where are the nails? Are they adjacent to the burning wick?
They are 90 degrees to the you know, basically they're horizontal, if you will. And they're about halfway into the candle. So whether they're touching the wicks or not, it does not appear so. It doesn't appear that they went all the way to the wick. But, you know, I think Bill's onto something, but I'm still trying to sort out a couple of things, like how do you get the potential difference? Questions, comments, confused?
Just alternating fast enough so that you can't see it on the LED.
Then how would you crank a DC motor?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, see, I'm not buying that. See, the AC motor, the DC motor was the part that really got me going. Well, when I asked Senior Joyce about it, his answer was, I don't know.
Give up, what's your email?
Email is w2tango@att.net or ARRL.net, whichever you prefer. Alrighty. I'll leave that one alone since no one else has any comments. So let's move to the Don show and then the Tony show, and then we can take, I think it was Marco's question. I think it was Marco's NMA. So we'll go in that order. We'll see about other topics. So, W2JEK, I'm getting testy. No, anyway, talk to us, W2TTT.
Hey, K2PAR and the net W2JEK, good evening, everybody. I just want to remind everybody that we're having our next test session at the Hamfest at 8 o'clock in the morning on the 28th of this month at the same place at the high school in classroom 123. And we'll have a test session in June on the 17th of June. That's a Friday night. That's at 7 p.m. And then we won't have any test sessions until September sometime. I'll have to pick a date for that. In the meantime, I want everybody who's studying for general to remember that the question pool is going to change as of July 1st, at which time you should, if you're studying now, you should get to a test session before the end of June. Otherwise, you're going to have to pick up a whole new study guide and start all over again with your studying. So that's about it. Back to that, W2JEK.
Okay, very good. Any further questions for Don? Okay, thank you, Don. All right, Mr. Tony, it's all yours. K2AY, W2TTT, K2BAR.
Okay, here's K2AMI, the information guy. He's turning out to be that way. Anyway, this coming Saturday at 10 o'clock in the Pascack Brook County Park, which is up off of Old Hook Road in the easterly section of Westwood and close to Emerson, there's a county park up that way, and you can find this county park by Googling the name Pascack Brook County Park. On Google, you'll find any number of sites there, websites that will indicate even the map directions on how to get there and what else is available there. If you can get there shortly after around 10 o'clock, there'll be a couple of guys there setting up antennas and attempting to have a portable radio day, a portable day, okay? Bring your radio, bring a battery, bring an antenna. Nothing gets plugged in. There may not even be a generator there. We're not sure about that. Certainly not a barrel generator, but a big battery would be helpful. And it's just a fun day to see what antennas work and what kind of signals you can get out of a simple antenna. An antenna with an antenna tuner would be great. If your radio's got one built in, hopefully it'll cover the SWR that you might be developing. I just had a request from Jim on the 440 net to make sure I get there with a spud gun to get line up at some of the trees. I'm not sure I'm going to be there. I hadn't planned on going, but I might make an effort to get there for a few hours in the morning. Okay, now on Sunday, we have our semi-annual Barrow fox hunt. We have one in the spring and one in the fall. And that starts at about 12:30 or so at the Westwood High School parking lot. Same place as our ham fest and where we go for kid night. And a group of guys appear with some antennas that are directional and cars that are easy to operate. you need two people in a car, one to drive and one to listen to the radio. And then you get out once in a while and you take a reading and mark it on a coordinate on a map. Hopefully you'll be able to find where the fox is going to be. It's a lot of fun. It usually runs to a couple of hours from by 3 o'clock. We generally call it quits and end up at a pizza joint. So we've got one planned already, and the word has been spread, and we'll spread it more on Sunday. And the frequency will be identified on Sunday, so we don't have too many people going to frequency ahead of time. It might interfere with our efforts. So if you can, come on out. The only question I see is, I don't have helmet on frequency to predict the weather, but the weatherman's talking about some thunder showers and rain on Saturday and Sunday. But that doesn't mean it's going to rain all day, so we might be able to...
Repeater. Timeout. Clear.
When did you lose me?
We're talking about the weather.
Okay, that was kind of at the end. The comments were that in the event that we have any bad weather, of course, we might cancel it. But I think weatherman says we're going to have thunderstorms and scattered showers, and generally we can work around that. So positively, let's think about being there, and we'll worry about the weather later.
Mr. K.
Go ahead, Jim. 2K there.
Thomas, a 2K generator will be available on Saturday for sure. I'm not sure how the weather is going to cooperate for Sunday.
Don't need the generator for Sunday. We just need the fox hunt for Sunday.
There too.
Okay, and I personally know the fox. Seems to be a familiar friend of mine.
Okie dokie. Anybody else have any questions for Tony?
Well,
was a double there. Who doubled with Gordon?
Yeah, W2EWL. I had a question about a generator when we get around to it.
Gordon, take over.
Yeah, whose generator is it going to be, and what kind is it? Is it a Honda?
NS2K, yeah, it's a little 2K Honda.
I have two problems with a Honda. Number one, the output is not pure. It is a really high frequency ripple on the thing, causes interference on the radios, and also it dumps out on me. The circuit breaker doesn't go, but the engine stalls. Anything, you know anything about that?
I haven't had a problem that way thus far.
I've used Jim's generator for weekends and weeks and never had a problem.
Have you ever seen it overload?
No, but then again, I'm cautious. I'm not suggesting you're not, but, you know, I've just never had an opportunity to overload it.
Yeah, I overloaded it with a circular saw one time, a starting surge on the circular saw, and also on the shelter, the comm shelter that I have, I put a little too much stuff on. And instead of the circuit breaker going, the engine just stalled out on me. I wonder what's going on.
During the storm last spring, I did overload it once, at which point the engine continued to run, but the inverter section simply stopped. It didn't blow anything, didn't hurt it. It just stopped making output.
The circuit breaker didn't blow?
I don't think it did. I ended up stopping it and restarting the machine, and it came back, and it all continued to work fine.
Any experience with hash on the output?
I haven't heard anything. I haven't really heard a whole lot of noise on the output with any radio stuff. We've used that and other, the 3K version of it, for HF events, and it's so far our expense has been good.
Okay, I look at the output on a scope, and I see a really high frequency riding on the 60 cycle sine, beautiful sine wave, but very high frequency something riding on that sine wave, very tiny, but big enough to wipe out the AM radios that I have.
May have to bring some clip-ons, see if we can make that go away, experiment with it and without it.
Yeah, worth a try, yeah.
That is interesting. I've never noticed, and I've actually listened on AM with my Pro 3 of all things, with no DSP engaged, really, except for generic filtering. Yeah, bandwidth filtering, but not the noise function, while on the generator, and it's been fine. Interesting.
Tried getting info from Honda, but nobody knows anything, and nobody responded.
Anybody have any suggestions for Ken?
I'm going to have to try to dig up some clip-ons and see what we can do. Anyway, I'll bring one or two links of 60, whatever it is, foot 12-gauge, couple outlet strips. Not sure what all the need is. If somebody else wants to bring some more, that would be good too. But one way or the other, we'll be fine.
I have a question. Is your cell phone going to be with you that day such that we might be able to contact you from eastern Pennsylvania somewhere where we're going to be for the day and be able to try a contact?
Oh, I always have my cell phone.
It was kind of like a baited question, but yes. That'd be great. That would be wonderful. All right, because Jeremy has a hockey game middle of the day, like 11-ish. I'll go to about 1. I guess we'll get to eat and fart around, and then he's got another game at 7. So I will be looking for something to do for at least a couple hours during that interval.
You were saying that was a baity question?
Oh, yeah, I kind of walked into that, didn't I? Well, anyway. So... does anybody else have anything to add to this topic before we move on to Marco's question?
W1AU, I haven't had any noise problems with, I have a smaller version of the 3K, it's like a 2.8K Honda, and it's brand new and it's very clean with AM.
Is that the 3000, or was it E1000i or something, 3000i?
Yeah, it's the small brother of the other one. I think of it as a 2800 watt, but that's the right number. It's one that you can actually, one person can pick up and carry and walk around with.
Well, one Jim's referring to that he has is the 2KW version. You have the 3, essentially, the nominal 2.8. But, yeah, the EU 1000, 2000, and 3000 I's are just marvelous, marvelous generators. They really are. Listen this way. I can run the 2KW one in a scout camp, put it behind a couple of rocks, 100 feet from where people are sleeping, and they still can hear the crickets.
But how much of a load on it, though?
Oh, probably not much more than about maybe 800, 900 watts.
I have a heater in the shelter that takes up a kilowatt, and if I'm not careful, I put on some other tube equipment, and if I put the heater on, that's when I start to have problems, and the generator gets really loud.
Yeah. You have the 2KW?
Yeah, I've had it for a few years now. I thought it would be sufficient, but once I get that BC610 going in the shelter, I'm beginning to wonder. But I also have the cable that you use, you know, when you can sync up two together. I don't know, when you sync them up, do you need to have matching in power output, or can you sync up a 3kW with a 2kW?
Oh, I don't know. Mr. Jim, you've seen that cable before. You don't have one, but you've seen that cable before. What do you think?
I have not tried it, although I do vaguely remember seeing some FAQ someplace that said you shouldn't do that. But I can't, this is a vague recollection.
It says it in the manual for sure.
That mixed power levels?
Yeah, it's a no-no. You have to have two identical generators.
There you go. That'd be my guess. Alrighty. Anyway, what else do we have on this topic? Yeah, the bottom line is you have to have matching generators. It says that pretty clearly. And I wasn't sure, but I seem to recall reading that. Because I've read the manual, I think I might even, if I dig around, might have even downloaded the manual into my laptop at one point. But anyway, no big deal. What else did I want to pass along? I can't remember, but neither here nor there. Alrighty, Marco, your question, sir.
K2BAR, this is KC2ZMA. Tony actually answered a lot of questions about the fox hunt, but I just wanted to know more of a theory about you have a directional antenna and you're actually looking for the signal. I know you have to look at the HT, the handy-talkie on the bar, the single-strength bar, but just to get a better idea or a theory, because I've never done it before, I mean, if the bar, if you're pointing in one direction, and the bar is always pinned, then you know, or basically to know what that direction with the antenna you're pointing at. I don't know if I'm explaining it. I don't know if I'm explaining it okay, but if you move the antenna away, obviously the signal is fading, and the signal is actually dropping out, so you know not to go in that direction. So you're basically going, or you're driving into the direction of where the signal strength is stronger at all times. I believe if you give me more, a better explanation, but that's how I'm seeing it a little bit. So you're driving in a direction where the signal is strongest at the most, or when you're on foot, obviously. Tony and I went through it a little bit on Kit Night, and he explained it pretty good. Just to get more of an idea of how it actually looking for the signal, where the signal is coming from strongest. If you give me maybe a better explanation, maybe I'm not explaining it correctly though. But I'll get back to you there. This is KC2ZMA back to K2BAR.
Okay. Well, when there's full strength signal, that means you're close. That means you're real close. And the real trick at that point is to use the nulls of what you're receiving in order to figure out what direction is perpendicular to, or not necessarily perpendicular, but should we say, in the axis of the nulls. And you can probably figure it out. But, you know, you have to know, learn your antenna. What I would recommend you do, and I recommend anybody do this, as a way to practice strong signals, is tune a repeater that's in use and start swinging your antenna around while people are jabber-jawing on it. And, start to figure out how your antenna works. Get a feel for it. Get a feel for it as you move around buildings and structures and rocks and other such things like that. That helps a lot. And you don't want your first understanding of your antenna's behavior and learning where it is to be during the fox hunt. You really want to understand where the nulls are. Are they perpendicular? Are they 45 degrees behind you? I mean, where are they? And it's important to figure that out in advance. And you can use a repeater, an active repeater, to learn that.
Anybody else? The nulled is actually the where the signal drops off all the way or just a little bit. Is that correct? Where it's like, or it's dropping off, or the signal is just cutting out completely?
You just hit on it when it drop, when it either drops out or gets less. Yes.
One of you.
Joe.
The one thing I would say, not being an expert in this case, I'm really not an expert, but we used to use these techniques when we had extraneous signals that we had to locate on the repeater 20 years ago, and that is you operate in two modes. When you're at a great distance from the target, since you can't just drive across people's lawns, you want to get a bearing, and you really don't know whether the transmitter is in front of you or behind you, and then you drive a little bit, and then you get a second bearing, and then you cross those, and it gives you an approximate idea where you should be going.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good point. You know, the other thing is use a map to, you know where these repeaters are, roughly speaking. And if you don't, we can tell you a couple of common ones. This one's in Alpine. The other one's in Paramus of the Community Services Building. Another one's 1070s on the mountain in Oakland, or Oakland Ringwood on Skyline Drive. I mean, there's places that have really well-known repeater locations. You can start there. Use those as reference points.
K2AMI.
Okay, Tony.
What I was showing with Marco was that you get a steady FM signal if you go to the Weather Channel 162.55, and there sometimes can be tunable on your 2-meter radio, most of the modern radios, and they put out a steady power and a steady signal, and you know they're kind of in New York. I'm not too sure exactly what building in New York, but if to learn more about your antenna, use that frequency and turn your antenna around and find out how you can point to the frequency and point to that direction that the frequency is originating at. So the weather frequency is very useful for testing an antenna.
At Rockefeller Plaza on the GE building.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, when it popped into my head, it came into my head at the RCA building, and I all of a sudden corrected myself in my head.
I remember RCA.
Yeah. They make TVs in China, right?
I've actually been in the Victor manufacturing building.
Which is where?
I'm not sure if it's still there, but it was in downtown Camden.
Really? Okay. Will do. Will do. That's neat. So, downtown Camden. How neat. Station, your audio is painfully low. Okie doke. I can't hear that. I think that's Tony asking if his audio is low. Yes.
Hello, test, test, test. Am I any better?
Much better.
And question. If you buy a new car and you have time and you want vanity call plates with a call sign on it, no, the amateur radio call sign plates, can you get them as the first issue plates? Or do you have to buy regular plates and then convert them to call sign plates.
You not only have to get regular plates and convert them, but you have to send the form, you have to get the form from Trenton, and you have to send the form to Trenton. It's ridiculous.
Oh, electronic filing.
Oh, there's no, a lot of things. They don't even have the, last I checked, this was only a few years ago, they didn't even have the forms online or in the, in the MVC offices. It's just stupid. It really is stupid. I've never understood this. But, yes, it's one of the contributing factors to why I don't bother with call letter plates.
Thank you.
But you can. I decided that big stick-on numbers and letters are just fine. Actually, they look better. You're actually more readable than my call sign plates would be anyway. Anyway, enough of that rant. I think it's fine for most people who have, you know, of conventional vehicles. For mine, it's a little dicey. You can, but my ladder does not obstruct my license plate, but it certainly doesn't make it pleasant to read. Anyway, all right. I see I have a few people who would like the. There's people who want the video. I'm gonna find Jimmy Joyce's email and send it to you. I'll do that after the net. So, do we have any other check-ins for the net? Anybody here have a topic they'd like to ask about?
K2VAR?
Go ahead.
K2VAR, this is KC2Z Romeo Golf. My name is Rick. I still have a question to throw out there, so if you guys are ready for it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rick. I got you and Marco confused. Go right ahead.
All right, Gordon. The question I have is, in the lines with the antenna, I'm looking at the arrow antenna, and I'd like to build something like that, like a 2-meter, 70-centimeter Yagi antenna with a duplexer, and I'm wondering if anyone has any experience. I see things where they talk about copper tubing, aluminum wiring, solid, hollow, everything under the sun. Does anybody have any experience? It looks pretty cut and dry, but who's got some good advice that can kind of steer me in the right direction? Back to net.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, I've built the antennas, but not the duplexer part. So there's a thing that you might want to look up online called cheap Yagis. They use a hairpin feed, like a short little J-Polish looking thing. They're marvelous. They're cheap. And our own WY2W is the champion of those. Having them feed one coax, well, that's a different matter. But you can definitely do an arrow-like antenna with that. No big deal.
Full bend or double bend?
2-meter 440, Tim.
If you want, I have an M-square that someone could have.
Well, there you go. Mr. Rick, it's your lucky day.
Gordon, this is Rick. I'm not sure who the other gentleman is or what the what he was just referring to. I know he referred to it by, I believe, the name brand. I'm really not that familiar with it. What are we talking about here? Back to
NS2K, why don't you describe it to Mr. Rick?
Okay, NS2K here, Jim. This is a little bit bigger. It's not the sort of thing you'd carry around or use for a Foxon. But if you were doing satellite work or whatever, it could work quite well. It's a little bit on the big side. I'm trying to think, the boom is something in the neighborhood of 5 or 6 feet, something like that. But it's the same basic design as the arrow, you know, just scaled up a little bit.
So that sounds great. This is something I want to try and do over at the schools in the next 2 months with a couple of my classes. I'd like to get out there and actually use it for the satellite work. What was the name of it? And I'll try and get some information. Are you looking to sell it or lend it out, or what are you looking to do there? NS2K. Back to you.
Yeah, if you'd like to borrow it, that would be fine. Right now, it's merely taking up space in my garage, but I could dig the thing out, and I don't know if you're going to do the thing on Saturday, but I think we could probably get it over there one way or the other.
I will not be able to make it over there. Unfortunately, I've got a wedding and one of my high-power matches up at Cherry Ridge Range on Sunday, so I know this whole weekend is pretty much shot. But what I'll do is if I can email you at ns2k@arrl.net, I can try and link up and maybe get some time to get over there. I think this would be a great thing to show the kids at school before summer comes and I wrap up teaching.
Yeah, the address works fine, and looking forward to your email.
Jim, thank you very much. I appreciate it. This is KT2 Zed Romeo Golf. My name is Rick, and I'm going to send it back over to Gordon at KTVAR.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's a couple of ways to do this, but, you can build a Jeep Yagi with a piece of square wood stock, a 1x1. Or even a piece of plastic. They actually make, plastic extruded square tubing, which is another marvelous thing to use. And you just jam some wire in there and secure it with, such amazing things like silicone glue or silicone RTV if you're a little more patient, or even crazy glue if you're totally impatient. And the driven element, you just, pre-make. I mean, look up the Cheap Yagi's thing. That's a pretty cool thing. I did that with some students last summer, and it's proven to be useful in a whole number of ways.
Know that Steve Hawley's had some very good luck building stuff of that nature, so he might be a good one to get hold of.
Some people are referring to copper ground wiring. Other people are referring to aluminum. Some people say hollow, solid. I was just wondering, does it make much of a difference? What type of metal or what diameter metal and things like this? I mean, I'm trying to make a basic one. I guess I can tune it down the road, but this is more for experimenting and practicing a little bit. Back to that.
Okay, so you can make the boom out of any non-conductive, for the Cheap Yagis, any non-conductive material. You can use 3/4 by 3/4 or 1x1 wood stock. You can also use plastic tubing, square tubing. You'll find that available at the Home Depot and Lowe's and things like that. For the wire, I would, for 440, you can certainly use number 10 wire. For 2 meters, it's a little soft. So what Steve usually does is use metal coat hangers. I seem to remember him using that, but any metal that you can solder to, and soldering to a coat hanger, by the way, is its own challenge. Requires a lot of scraping, a lot of care, and a lot of heat. But once you have the metal prepared, getting the coax onto it's not too hard. Once you wet the metal with solder, so that's pretty good. But look up cheapyagis.com. Don't go crazy. I think it's .com. It's certainly Cheap Yagis, but you can build that stuff, and the designs are all over the place.
All right, Gordon, it sounds pretty good. A funny story with that coat hanger. I've actually used those for welding when I ran out of rods on a pig roaster, and they're some pretty good steel. One other comment, you were talking about the plastic. I just wanted you to know, I think a couple of months ago we talked about Acme Plastic. I did take the job over there, and starting July 1st I will be their newest project manager, I'm going to be working on moving the company down to Florida and large parts of it down there. The operation will still be happening out of Woodland Park, but they're making some strategic moves to kind of ensure the success of the company, but I'm going to be part of it, so I did take that position. Back to you. This is KC2, Zen Romeo Golf. My name is Rick, sending it back to Ned.
So, Rick, you're a teacher now, and you're giving up teaching and going into a project management role?
I am. The long story short is I'm friends with the owners of the company and have been friends with their wife, who is also a teacher, for a number of years. And through our normal course of conversation, they've always kind of looked to grab me for a position over there. And with the way things are going, I've got two kids. I want to have more kids. I just need more money, and I need a more progression in my career. And, yeah, I decided to take a role as a project manager to get started. But there's some bigger things in store that I'm kind of being groomed into those positions. So only time will tell how well it pays off, but, yeah, I'm going to be leaving teaching, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you can't take the teacher out of a human being, even if they're not, even that's not your job. But, yeah, I understand. Okay, well, that's very good. So does that mean you'll also be a Florida resident at some time in the future?
It looks like I may be. It looks like it would probably be sometime around June or July of next year. So I have some training time and then some commuting time back and forth. There's a rough period in there from January on where I'll be in and out of Florida back and forth. But then it looks like I may be doing some work down in Florida for the time being and possibly relocating. And I was quick to look up some of the local shooting ranges, the hunting areas, and the amateur radio scene down in the north of Miami around the plantation parkland, somewhere around the west side of Fort Lauderdale. But I could be moving down there. We'll see what happens.
Move sooner than later. There's plenty of good, cheap real estate. good for you. Excellent, excellent, excellent. All righty. Well, and your kids are young yet, so they're not in school, so you're not disrupting them too much. That's even better. Anyway, congratulations. That's great. Let's see. I can't remember what else I was going to throw into this. So, any other questions, comments, confusions for the net? Please call KTBAR.
KC2ZMA.
Go.
K2BAR, this is KC2ZMA. I just wanted to comment on or ask a question to what Tony asked before about vanity license plates, amateur radio vanity license plates in New Jersey. You actually have to go to motor vehicle, or can you actually do it online if you want your call sign as you know, your vanity license plate back to net?
Need to get the form from some bureaucrat in Trenton. They mail it to you, you fill it out, you send it back to Trenton, and I think they mail you your plate, and then you have to bring in your old plates to the local MVC. I think that's how that works. You can go on the MVC website. They might grace you now, since we have the new high-tech MVC. You might find form online. It's the same form that's used by firefighters and ambulance people and things like that. There's a nominal fee for it.
Good JK.
Mr. Don.
I don't remember initial how I got that. I know I had it was on my 86 Dodge, but I when I traded cars to other vehicles, the car dealer just wanted my copy of my license, and he Xeroxed a copy of my license and sent that into Motor Vehicles with the paperwork. And when I picked up the car, my plates were on.
You had the plates already. You were transferring from out of the car, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, it's the initial part that's a little more of a dance. Anyway, Marco, does that answer your question?
Yeah. So basically, how do you get the form, though? Do you have to call Trenton down there? I was a little confused there. Back to you.
I'm sorry. I think at one time you did. I think now the form is available online, but you still have to fill it out, mail it, throw it in with a check, proof of all the other stuff that they want you to do. You know, what vehicles are going on, all that stuff with the form. And then you mail that to Trenton, and they mail you your plates. I'm pretty sure that's how it works now. The form should be online. If not, call the NBC in Trenton.
Okay, yeah, I see, I think it's state.newjerseyusmotorvehicle. I'm on the website here, Motor Vehicle Commission or something around there. But, yeah, I'll get it. I'm going to research this thing a little bit. Thanks, everybody. I'll send it back to Ned. This is KC2ZMA.
Ms. 2K.
Mr. Jim.
Yeah, a year ago when I did that, I ended up talking to them on the phone. They sent me the form, and, you know, we did it that way. I don't believe it was online back then. It might be now.
It's like the hardest form in the world to get.
But, you know, they knew what I was talking about when I said I was an amateur radio operator and wanted the ham radio plate, and whoever I was talking to knew right off what I was looking for.
Yeah. Ah, dear me. You know, maybe it's me, but I am so tired of seeing young, able people in really nice cars of all shapes and sizes pulling into handicapped spots because they just can't be bothered. It's a damn shame. Anyway, I wished I had the New Milford police number in my head. I would cheerfully report this dingbat, this punk, but I'm not going to confront him. It's not my place. Police officers need to do that. They need to get a ticket. They get a very expensive ticket out of it, too. I think that's one of the $100-plus ones, isn't it?
It makes a big expensive meal if it's at a restaurant, and the second time around you really get the book thrown at you.
Yep, absolutely. You know what? Dear me. Maybe I'll take a picture. I have my camera here. What the heck? Anyway, what else is going on? Anybody else have any questions or comments for that?
Yeah, comment to you, Gordon.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know you're interested in Aries. One of the things that came in handy, I used to carry with me a list of all the telephone numbers of all the police departments. It was used to be published in the telephone directory in the front. This is before 911 came into being and everybody says, call 911. And I had all the telephone numbers there, and the people in the Red Cross were very happy to have that piece of paper handy because they were calling police departments directly because they wanted to talk to them and not go through some kind of a 911 thing, which I don't know how well it was established back in Hurricane Floyd, but I still think that would be a good piece of information to have in your little go kit there for your emergency purposes. I don't know whether they still publish it in the phone book or not. You might have to make it up. I also included things like the Palisades County, Palisades Parkway Police, County Police, State Police to round the whole thing out. Not just the locals in Bargain County, but some of the other groups as well. Back to that. W2JK.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. You know, I used to carry a list like that around, too, and the reason why I don't now is because of 911, and I got lazy, but I think you're right. I think it's useful. Like, I have the Burnfield police number, which is 387-4000, and you just follow the magic numbers around. I have found it's useful to have two numbers for almost every level of government. One is the police number, and the other one is whatever the administrative body is.
you know, let's say in Bergenfield's case, you have the borough hall, you know, the main switchboard number and stuff like that. And they have a little call director that'll wander you through, you know, whatever extension you want to go to, et cetera. But that's a good thing. And oddly enough, I have both the New York and the New Jersey section of the Palisades Park. I have both police numbers and also both administrative numbers. Alpine and Bear Mountain, and then the two police numbers related to them. Plus, I have a few other numbers. I have the direct numbers for a couple of PIP facilities. But yeah, it's good. Pardon me. One thing that I don't know if you guys saw last night, Ron and Mike Adams, and besides other people, arranged for a hazardous materials level one awareness course up in Mahwah. We did that last night. James and I went, and I downloaded a really cool app, which is the emergency response guide for chemicals. You know that lovely color-coded numeric placard thing that sits on the back of rail cars and the side of rail cars and back of trucks and things like that. Pardon me. So I downloaded an app from one company, ERG tool it's called. I'm sure there's a version of it for iPhones and iPads. I have the Android version, but it's very nice because it has the 2008 Emergency Responders Guide, the Meth Lab Indicators, that's always exciting, the NIOSH Guide, and then it's got an ability for you to log your own incidents so you can take down details. So that's really, really good. Anyway, but so that's another useful guide in your toolkit and your go kit. I'm finding my
repeater.
I'm finding dot dot dot.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Sorry, everybody. I'm finding that I am keeping the bulky things in electronic form. I've gotten to the point where I'm keeping manuals for radios I don't own that other people are likely to have on my laptop, which I think is a very useful thing. So, for instance, an FT-60, a VX-3R, some of these types of things that are popular with some folks and, you know, oblivious to me. Some a Kenwood Icom, a Linco guy, generally speaking, when it comes to handy talkies. So, and mobile rigs for that matter, too. So, you know, but in any case, it's useful to have these manuals in some sort of kit so that you can walk somebody else through their misery. Good thing to do.
A related comment?
Okay, Jim.
Back to the generator thing, actually. I just did a little poking around. I ran across on contesting.com a comment from Charlie Gallo, who was a refugee from ABC, KG2V. But he's talking about a 2K in that case, EU2K. And he's saying it's making quite a bit of hash on 75, 80, and some on 40. But he says the good news is three turns around a Type 31 core does a great job clearing up the noise. Anyway, so I found some clip-ons. I found a few. I'm going to see if I think I have some more here someplace. But one way or the other, I think we can probably get rid of whatever noise.
Okay, you put that on the AC lead coming off the generator?
Yeah, it's close to the generator, so you can get it.
Well, obviously. Okay, I just wanted you to be clear because we have folks who won't know what those are. These are like the steroidal form of the clamp-ons that you might get for your computer cables. Gotcha.
Sorry, yeah. Yeah, we'll, but I've got a couple at this point. I think I have some. different types and manufacturers, but these, for the most part, are some that came with things like plasma TV sets and other rather nasty devices.
Jim, this is Ken, W2EWO.
Okay, Ken.
Yeah, when you're talking about the core, generally I've got some pretty hefty wire coming, pretty hefty cable coming out of the generator. How big a core, how large are the available cores around?
Yeah, in this case, yeah, I'll just try some clip-on cores that are designed for half-inch plus cable. I think I've got enough of them. I don't know what the core material is. Hopefully, they'll be somewhere near suitable.
So basically, you'd get one turn through that core. I mean, one pass through the core counts as one turn. You wouldn't be able to wind more than one turn there. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That's why I would put more than one on the cable.
Yeah, I'll give that a try. As I said, I put the output on a scope, and it's definitely hashed there. So I think I'll give that a try, but I can certainly test the results because it just wipes out the receiver on 75.
It looks like what Charlie's doing is he's running three turns through what's got to be a fairly good size 31 core, but he was talking about trying to move that arrangement inside the generator before the duplex receptacle. So we could run it with unjacketed wire.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd mess around with inside the generator. I don't know how much room is in there. I just look inside when it comes time to change the oil, you know, things like that. But I'd be happy if I could just eliminate it with an outboard connection of some kind.
Yeah, agreed. And I know they are pretty tight. I haven't taken that part of it apart, but there's not a whole lot of room in there.
The outlet bus and just stack that with ferrite and make that part of your kit.
I doubled on some of that, Gordon.
Yeah, what I was saying was, couldn't you just simply put like a 2 or 3 foot, even they make these 18-inch cords, and they usually have like either a GFI in them, or they just have a triple distribution head at the end. And you could make that part of your generator kit and put the ferrites on that. That way, it's not a big, you know, accessory.
I have
possible
triple outlet things. Pretty hefty cable. I've got one of those things. So I think I'll take the easy way out and try it outboard and see what happens. I'm looking forward to trying it.
That's kind of what I'm thinking you should do. Yeah, why not? Does anybody know what ferrite material typically is found in, you know, in Radio Shack? I mean, there's no labels on those clip-ons. They have the barrel ones, and they have the ones that are somewhat rectangular that that you're supposed to actually wind multiple turns through, and they actually pop open in both cases. So I'm sort of curious, for the ones that snap, just snap over the cable. Anybody have a rough idea as to what ferrite material that might be? Is that 31 or 43, or what is it?
My snarky answer would be whatever was cheapest that day.
Yep, I would agree. Well, isn't there a way we could measure the permeability of the thing?
There's got to be a way you can look to see how lossy the thing is. I'm sure there's a wonderful, cool way to do that. I don't know off the top of my head.
Some way to repurpose the antenna analyzer?
Could be a good start.
Yeah, why not?
To JK.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, I think
I think one of the things they figure out in these cores is how many, what the inductance is per turn. So if you've got 28 turns, you've got 28 whatever of, it's one, let's say one microhenry, and then if you've got 28 turns, you've got 28 microhenries or something like that in a particular toroid. Now, you could figure something out that way. Put a couple turns through there and see what the kind of response you get, how much inductance within the ducts it made it. That might tell you something.
That's not a bad idea.
That would be a good project. Sit around, wind some coils, and then just measure the inductance, figure that out. Probably a good way to do it.
It's okay.
Exactly. Find out where the sucker's resident and be done with it.
And that's okay.
Go ahead.
Well, part of the trick is how much inductance it is, but the other part of the trick is, is it actually effective at whatever frequency? As a lot of the core materials, while they might be very high permeability, don't work well at all at higher frequencies.
Right. Well, oddly enough, more often than not, I'm not worried about filtering 10 meters. I'm more worried about filtering 80 meters or 40 meters.
And that's why I think these other cores are going to work just fine.
Or even, dare I say, 160 in AM broadcast. Alrighty. Interesting. Alright. Well, we should try that. That sounds like a good kid night activity.
Get out your best network analyzer. Hey. Good job for the antenna analyzer. That'll do much of what anybody needs. NS2K.
Yeah, really. You know, I've been here for the last 15 minutes in this parking spot, sitting next to a handicap spot, and five people have put their noses in there. Four have parked. I mean, it's just outrageous. It's just outrageous. Like, guys would be like shooting ducks in a barrel. They need to do something about this.
Saying that some started to park when and they realized what it was and backed off?
One out of the five.
Pretty sad.
And all young people, with one exception. One guy was about maybe 35, which in my world is still young. Anyway, maybe I'm just getting more sensitive to this as I get older, but I've never, ever, ever parked in a handicapped spot. Ever.
Now, the rules can work both ways, too.
Okay, the TechNet goes into a new realm. Go ahead.
So Robert, who obviously had legitimate handicap plates, parked in a private parking lot next to Bergen Players. And they were giving people tickets for parking back there, even on days when there wasn't a single business in the building open, which strikes me as being rather juvenile of the owners. But he got away with it because he, with his handicap plates, was actually parked in a handicap spot. And they took the ticket back.
Oh, that's funny. Well, good for him. Good for him. Sometimes it's good to game the system. Good for him. Alrighty. Before we drift into space here, do we have any further questions, comments, observations for the TechNet? Please call K2BAR. Well, Jim, we're glad you jumped in. Bill, I'm glad you jumped in. I'm glad a lot of people jumped in. It's been a good net tonight, so I want to say thank you. Wish everyone a fine evening, and I'm going to call it a day at this point.
crawl off I got to go to the 7-Eleven and do my thing there, and then I'm going to go off to home and call it a day. So, last question, comments, confusions, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, so the emergency response guide tool, or ERG tool, is very good for chemical hazard detection and mitigation and safety strategies and things like that. So it's all good, and it's good for anybody to have. You never know when you might need that when you're rolling down the highway of life. So 7-3, everybody, and have a good one. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. Wishing everybody have a fun weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I'm going to try to call Jim on Saturday and see if I can get a contact going. W2TTT, Godspeed.
7-3-all, NS2K.
TTT listening. Sorry, was there someone there? W2TTT.
TTT, W2IT. Good evening.
Howdy. How's it feel to talk on a repeater you don't have to fix?
Feels good. Gotta tell you that, right? Yeah, no, I didn't want to go there, but no, I was just listening a little bit to the TechNet, and I turned my HF radio on for the first time in God knows how long, and took a little paintbrush, and I dusted all the dust off all the little corners of the display, you know, where the schmutz builds up and everything, and as you can hear in the background, just decoding a little read, so just doing my little monthly operational check on everything, that's all. How about you?
Yeah, well, we had a good TechNet today. We've had a string of not so great ones, frankly. I mean, they were adequate, but they weren't interesting. This one was at least interesting. It had a bunch of different topics that got people going, which was great. And that's been a big help. I knew we were going to be without Jim Joyce tonight because he has some, I think it's his wedding anniversary. What the heck? You know, so he's got a higher calling tonight. But, you know, you mentioned that schmutz that built up on the edges of displays and crevices on equipment. You know, I think when phone designers design phones, they need to think a bit more diligently. Because let me tell you, there's some spots on some phones that are just ridiculous. I mean, I have one where the only way to clean it up is to take a Q-tip, push as much of the fuzz down toward the tip as you can, down the sides, and wet it, and then you'll get some of the secondary crud off. But you have to do that with a dry one first to get the first mess off, then use a wet one to get into the corners. They have these little, like, camera sockets, you know, where the lens is recessed and things like that. Oh, my God, it's awful.
Yes. Yes, it is. I call it radio schmutz. It's the gooey substance that collects around the knobs and the switches, in between switches. It's just that gummy, you know, sticky, dirty stuff, you know. There's really, you know, no name for it, but that's kind of like the name that I coined a few years ago, just called radio schmutz. you know, and I deal with that stuff every day. You know, it's amazing that, you know, people, you know, use this stuff every day, and it's, they don't really keep it, you know, clean, you know. I'm almost to the point where I have to wear rubber gloves when I handle some of this stuff that I work on, because you just don't know where it's been, you know. Yeah, every once in a while I get one that got dropped in the toilet. And I asked the person, was the water brown or yellow or clear? And they can never tell me. So I treat it like hazardous material when it comes in for a repair.
Yeah, so what do you use to clean it up? I mean, I've been known to just use, you know, alcohol and just smudge the whole. I mean, just basically spray alcohol over it, or use an alcohol wipe of some sort just to get the crud off. I'm near home, by the way, so I'm not going to be here that long. But I'm just kind of curious as to what is going on. Somebody just pulled up in front of my house and blocked my driveway. Are you kidding? Oh, jeez. Anyway, so what do you use? I've been using alcohol.
Yeah, okay. I know you want to get inside, so I won't stay long either because I got other things to do too. But in short, I don't use alcohol only because most of the stuff I work on is plastic. Lexan, whatever you want to call it, a composite case. What I use is a substance called Goo Gone, G-O-O-G-O-N-E, and it's like a gel, I would say. It's like a jelly, and they sell it in Home Depot, and that stuff gets everything off, and it doesn't attack the plastic or anything. The only thing, you have to really wipe it down and, you know, maybe wipe it afterwards with a, damp rag just to get the film. Sometimes it leaves a film, but, that stuff works really good. I can't really use alcohol. Sometimes I'll use it, on metal, just to get some of the stuff off the metal, but, never on plastic.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Use some sort of spray display cleaner, which is meant for plastic, so not glass display cleaner, but you know, something that works better for that kind of stuff. All right, Mr. Paul, I'm glad to hear you're up on 40 meters or 80 meters listening to Riddy. That's super. I'm going to crawl inside and call it a day. I'm beat. I even get some dinner out of the deal. There's lasagna inside waiting for me. So, 7-3 and have a good one. W2IT. By the way, let me know what you think of 835 every so often. W2TTT.
Yeah, okay. I got that in my my radio on my truck, so I'll tune around up there. And I'll give you a call up there. Yeah, I'll definitely do that. All right, Gordon, have a good night. I'll talk to you at some point in the near future. W2TTT, W2IP, regards to the family.
Thank you, sir. And by the way, I still listen more here than there, but, you know, I'm just trying to get some received reports and really see what other people have found it to be, where people are finding it to be useful. I mean, some of the favorite places you and I like to to hike, either on the Palisades or the Ramapos, I think are pretty well served by that. I just wanted to get your take on it. Anyway, 7-3, be well. W2IP, W2TTT.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll talk about it. I'll maybe tomorrow morning on the way to work, I'll give you a shout sometime between 8 and 8:45 in the morning, see if you're around. Have a good night. Enjoy your dinner. W2IP.
I'll definitely be on this or the other repeater in that time frame. Very good. W2TTT. Night-night.
KV2 JLL Mobile, listening.